Welcome, everybody, to this podcast episode about the new and growing issue of noise impacts. My name is Frank Thompson, and I'm a senior marine scientist. What you just heard were underwater calls from killer whales I recorded during my PhD a while back. Killer whales use these sounds to stay in contact with one another over large distances. Sound is very efficient for them because it travels underwater four times faster than in air. And killer whales have an elaborate system of sounds to keep in touch over these very wide distances. In general, sound is really important for marine life, not only for marine mammals, but also for fish and invertebrates. Man produces sound as well, either intentionally, for example, if you look at seismic surveys for geophysical explorations, or unintentionally, if you look at shipping sound, for example. And these sounds from humans can impact marine life in many ways. And this is what we want to talk about today in the context of offshore wind farms. The field of impact assessment is concerns both the biology and the acoustics. And for the latter, I have invited an expert on the matter, Uwe Stöber, a senior expert on hydroacoustics. Uwe, a very warm welcome to this podcast.
Yes, thank you, Frank.
Uwe, can you talk us through offshore wind farm sound in general? What are the types of sound that are emitted during an offshore wind farm life cycle?
Well, we have different phases during the lifetime of an offshore wind farm. So let's start with the construction, which is probably the noisiest part, because most often you have piles that are just really hammered into the ground with impact pile driving. Then there's this operational phase where the wind turbines are just running, and they're also producing sound, which is, however, at a much lower level than during the construction phase. And then there's also decommissioning, where you might also have all different types of sounds related to the deconstruction. You might have to try to get the piles out there out of the water again, for example, and then have typical deconstruction noises there.
I see. Can you elaborate a little bit on the sound produced during operation? Where does the sound come from?
Basically from all these different moving parts of the wind turbine. So, for example, the gearbox is really a loud source, but newer turbines have direct drive technology without a gearbox. But still, you have all the turning parts that are mostly doing the noise, and that is then going as vibrations through the turbine and the pile into the water.
I see. But we have heard from you that the impact pile driving is probably the most concerned because the sound levels are so comparably very high. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. I mean, just imagine when you are hammering to a nail or the wall, it's just really very noisy. And that is exactly what happens there through construction when you do the impact pile driving. You have your pile, and with a really huge hammer, you try to push it into the seafloor. And that is, of course, then a lot of noise really, again, in terms of vibration that is going directly into the water or through the air and then into the water, then through the pile into the water and even through the seafloor and then back into the water.
Interesting, fascinating stuff. Uwe, can you talk us through a noise assessment task? I understand that you have to model the sound in the environment. Why are you using modeling in the first place?
Well, of course, we want to have a precise or accurate description of the sound field as possible, so we can really assess the impact on the environment and on marine mammals. We usually start with the source, so try to find out, okay, what are the noise levels? And not only the broadband overall level, but really what is the spectrum, what frequencies are especially loud and which ones are less important. So that is what we can get from literature, for example, from observations that others did before. But you can also do a really dedicated sound source modeling. So if you really know the exact dimensions, the materials, the hammer, and so on, then you can really also model basically really the vibrations that happen there that are really in this pile. and get also a source level, a source spectrum.
And what happens after that?
Well, then we go on with the sound propagation. So we have our source spectrum that we always need. And then we use different kind of models to solve the equation, to solve how this noise is now propagating in the water and what the noise is doing in the water, like maybe reflected at the sea surface, it may be reflected at the sea floor, it might also go into the sea floor and then back into the water column, but it's also attenuation both in the seafloor, but also like in the water column, just due to molecular effects, for example. And the water depth is very relevant because there is a lower limit, a lower frequency limit for acoustic waves that they can propagate. So if it's really shallow water, low frequency waves cannot fully propagate. So they will be attenuated very fast, and that is what you can really see on this on the noise map in the end, like that the sound can propagate very well in certain directions and not in others.
What is a noise map?
A noise map is the way we look at the noise in the very end. It is basically like a map, and often we also use the bathymetry as a background, and then we have all the sound levels mapped in this map really. And we typically use just the maximum noise level over the water column. So to be sure that we have a conservative estimate, that we really get the maximum level that some marine mammal could experience. That is also why we can already see from these maps where the noise might affect marine life, especially marine mammals. Well, I think that is, Frank, that is something that you know much better about than I do.
So perhaps yes. I think what we are doing is we're using these criteria, noise thresholds, sound levels, where if they are exceeded at that distance, as you just said, certain impacts occur. There can be for example behavioral impacts. The animals can just simply avoid the area, swim away. There can be temporary elevation of the hearing threshold or permanent elevation of the hearing threshold. That just means that in the temporary case that the marine life hears not very good at these frequencies for a while, but this can also be permanent. And this is what we know as TTS versus PTS. PTS is permanent threshold shift and TTS is temporary threshold shift. What I have to say, though, is that these criteria are very preliminary. We don't really have a lot of data on you know, that justifies the criteria insofar as experiments in the wild are rare. There are increasing now studies on behavioral impacts, which is very good for us because these impacts can be quite large. We're talking about, for example, for a harbor porpoise, these impact ranges can be as far as 20 kilometers from the sound source. We're talking about very huge ranges. But of course, we need a lot of more data to conclude on impacts. And once we have these kind of areas and zones of impact, we can then make an assessment of the number of individuals that are impacted. And we call that, for example, in the US, it's called takes. How many animals from a population are impacted by that specific impact, let's say a behavioral impact or an injury. And using predetermined thresholds, then we assess the significance. If we find that there's a significant impact, then we have to do some noise mitigation. And I want to play the ball back to you, Uwe, now. Can you give us an impression about a noise mitigation technique for offshore wind farms?
Yes, of course. Noise mitigation can be done with different methods. I mean, first of all, which is not really a mitigation, but you can just think about reducing the sound source by reducing hammer energy and so on. But then once you can't do anything about the source itself, then you can think about how you can prevent part, at least, of the sound propagation. One very useful system is a bubble curtain. So you basically put a lot of bubbles into the water. So the sound is also reflected and attenuated. There are different types of bubble curtains, like smaller bubble curtains directly around the pile. Then you have the big bubble curtain, the BBC, which is basically at a bit larger radius around the construction site, and even double big bubble curtains. So it's then like two bubble curtains behind each other, and they have then an increased effect. And these bubble curtains, they reduce the sound, not for all frequency and then the same amount, but they are very effective for the frequencies that are emitted from this construction work, from the impact pile driving.
How do you create a bubble curtain?
Well, basically, that's very simple. You have just a hose at the seafloor, and you put a lot of air in there, like under pressure, and then it has like a lot of small holes, this hose, and then there are just a lot of bubbles rising up. And this sounds very simple now, but actually it's a science on its own, because you need to make sure that there are enough holes, they have the correct size, so the bubbles have the correct size, the pressure must be correct. All this needs to be calculated beforehand, so you have really the best effect on the sound reduction.
I see. Fascinating stuff, Uwe. I think what I have to mention here in addition to that is that these mitigation measures are only actually necessary when you find this kind of significant impact in your biological impact assessment. Maybe a look into the future, Uwe. What are new developments when it comes to noise assessment?
Well, I think we are shifting more and more to the description of the soundscape itself. So no longer going for these single events like construction work and like one hammer strike, but really to look at the overall soundscape and sound that is not only from, for example, operation from the offshore wind farms, but also from shipping and from other sources, and to combine all these data into one complex view of the soundscape. Also, perhaps even online, getting online data, AIS data from ship movements, and then combining them with what we know about the source strengths for ships and the sound propagation, and then to build real noise maps again that just show what the sound field looks like at a specific moment in time.
I see. And what about offshore wind farms? What are the new developments there for the assessment?
For offshore wind farms, we are also going for the operational noise. And one really hot topic is the increasing noise with increasing size of the turbines. As you might know, like the turbines, they're getting bigger and bigger. And it has turned out that the bigger the wind turbine, the more noise it is emitting during operation. And we might come to a point where we cannot any longer say, okay, the noise from operation is really so low that we don't need to consider it. But actually, and we expect that in the soon future, the sound level might reach a level where we really need to reconsider it and to double check that it doesn't have any impact on the environment.
Right. But I mean, these new turbines will be also, are they not more efficient and actually a little bit quieter than the old turbines?
Yes, I think in the beginning I mentioned already that this direct drive technology is becoming more and more popular. And the direct drive technology is very likely less noisy than the gearboxes. So there is a reduction in sound, and there are already very first measurements that compare these two, and that has shown that they are really well. I think this one measurement showed like about 10 decibels less noisy. But despite this reduction in noise from newer technology, it might still be noisy enough that we should better consider it in the future.
Interesting. Well, we are reaching the end of our episode. Thank you very much, Uwe, for the valuable information.
Thank you for letting me be here.
And everyone, thank you very much for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Water Insider. You can find more episodes on our website, dhigroup.com, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow us.